This is Red Ice Radio, a beacon of sanity from Northern Europe. RedIceCreations.com.
From the land of the Geats, the homeland of Beowulf, this is Red Ice Radio. Welcome back. I'm Henrik Palmgren. Thank you for tuning in. It's always humbling to have you with us. I hope you're doing well wherever you are. We are beginning to approach autumn up here in the north. And when this program is being put together, we are now 95 days away from the mythical December 21st, 2012 date. RedIceCreations.com and RedIceMembers.com, our websites. Today we're talking with Larkin Rose. He is known for debunking the most dangerous superstition, government. He is a voluntarist, anarchist, and a tax protester, as well as an author of several books. He promotes the concepts of self-ownership and a voluntary society, writing articles, giving talks, and making videos. Today, Larkin will explain the myth of the necessity of government. We'll talk about how people have been programmed to believe in the authority of government and the monstrous results thereafter. Authority, superstition, obedience, and the Milgram experiment are some of the items we're going to discuss today. Stay with us for more. Hi, Larkin. Good to talk to you today. Welcome to Red Ice Radio. First of all, thank you for coming on the program. I think this is going to be very interesting, so we appreciate you taking some time off today talking with us.
Well, thanks for having me. Should be fun.
You bet. Lots to talk about, of course. But why don't we, as we usually do, we have a new voice on the program. We haven't had you on before. It's always good to set a little bit of the background. And maybe you can just kind of tell us a little bit about some of the ideas that you've been speaking and writing about throughout the year. Some of the topics, I guess, and an overview, however you would like to introduce yourself, I guess, to our audience, Larkin.
Sure. I don't know if I count as famous, but I'm at least infamous for annoying governments by basically introducing people to the idea that there cannot be such thing as a legitimate ruling class at all. Most people are so stuck in the paradigm of who should we elect to office, what form should our government take, what should it do, and what should it control, what should it fund. The whole discussion rests on the paradigm that there is such thing as a legitimate government, and then they bicker over the details. And the main message I'm out there telling people about, which has actually been catching on like wildfire in the last few years, is the idea that you can't, there isn't such thing as a legitimate ruling class. It shouldn't be doing anything. It shouldn't even be there. And that's a huge shock to most people's way of thinking. And it would have been to mine for half of my life to even begin imagining a world in which there isn't a ruling class, there isn't a government. And people, you know, they usually react by thinking, you know, oh, it's going to be mayhem and death and destruction and we'll all be like wild animals.
Yep.
Which isn't the case, but it's the natural, because people are, it's like if an animal's been raised its whole life in a cage. And you open the cage door, it looks out and says, I don't know what's out there. I'm scared to death of what's out there because I have no idea what it would be like. And so basically what I do in my books and in the talks I give and in the articles I write and in almost everything I do is telling people that humanity wasn't meant to be basically a domesticated species owned by a ruling class. It was actually supposed to be the top, where every human being owns himself, is in charge of his own life, and there will still be some disagreements and bad things can still happen. But the idea that we need to be basically managed like cattle by a ruling class, even a tiny ruling class, because over here in the U.S., the whole supposed point of the Constitution was to make the ruling class really nice and really small and really weak and mm-hmm. do hardly anything.
Right.
Which, of course, didn't turn out that way. Turned into this giant war machine and with a huge extortion racket and everything else. But even the theory, like a lot of Americans say, well, we have to get back to the Constitution. And I basically say, well, why do you think it would be any better the second time around? Like, there's a reason that was doomed to lead to this, because it didn't quite do away with the idea that a ruling class can be legitimate. That somebody can actually have authority over you, meaning you you have to throw away your own ability to judge right from wrong and just obey what they say. That's basically the essence of the belief in authority in government, that you have an obligation to bow to somebody else's ideas and opinions over your own. And the reason I'm out there talking about this day and night constantly isn't that it happens to hurt the individual who chooses to do that. It's that there are lots and lots and lots of good people out there who are accidentally condoning what amounts to widespread evil, because it isn't just the person who votes who gets lied to and then duped and then I'm paying the price for being a bonehead. The person who votes puts into power people who rob millions and millions of his neighbors and then go wage war on the other side of the world and are killing people.
Yeah.
So it's people's good intentions. The problem is not that the world is full of evil people. It's people's good intentions plus their belief in government that leads to these horrendous results. And the good news is it's not like we have a world of genuinely evil people that need to be fixed. We just have a world of people where most of them believe in a superstition called authority that twists their goodness and their virtue and their compassion and turns it into fuel for evil and destruction. I mean, it's not to sound overly dramatic, but that's literally what the belief in government does, is it takes good people and converts their energy and their production into power for the nastiest people in the world who go around murdering and robbing people by the millions. And that's not okay. And if people would just overcome that superstition and recognize it for what it is and throw it away, the vast majority of injustice would be gone overnight, because the vast majority of injustice isn't done by genuinely evil people. It's done by people who think, well, this is authority, I have to enforce the law. And the other people saying, well, we have to obey the law and we have to just vote for who we want and make them take everybody else's money. They play the game that gets them enslaved and gets everybody else enslaved just because they don't understand that the game is a gigantic lie down to its very base. It's just an illusion, and people need to give that up. So most of what I do is try to get people to understand that, to give it up.
Really good. There's a lot of things here we can examine and talk further about. Now, I want to try to keep this in somewhat around the time we're in right now, if I can put it that way. But how far back do you think we have to go? How far back do you go to find the origins of this, a problem that many people have been trying to figure out, and I personally feel that it's necessary to try to understand the roots of it in order to try to make a better choice, basically. So with that in mind, how far back do you go, Larkin?
Well, there's so many different steps you could go to. Like, I think in my own life, I gave up being a statist probably 1994, maybe somewhere around there.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as the myth itself among everybody, it's all of recorded history shows examples of people who come along and say, I have the right to rule you, and lots of other people believe them. And they used to call themselves churches. Now they almost always call themselves government. It's the same thing. It's a group that does that. Now, part of that can just sort of be misunderstanding passed on. But what we have today is very intentionally engineered and planned. And that I would like the current form of authoritarian indoctrination, I would say, traces back directly to the Prussian indoctrination system, which they openly said, we're trying to come up with a way to train people to not have any will other than what the ruling class wants them to have.
Yeah.
In other words, to not have free will, to not have any choice of their own, to just be easily controlled and manipulated tools for the masters, the ruling class. And they openly admitted that was the goal of the Prussian indoctrination system. And that's what modern schooling is modeled after. I mean, directly.
You bet. Yeah.
It's not just kind of sort of like it. It's a direct descendant of a system that was described as being intended to indoctrinate people into being easily controlled, especially as it relates to military matters. He said, well, what do we have to put kids through so that when we tell them go over there and kill somebody, they do it? Yeah. Literally, that was one of the main goals of the system upon which the U.S. education system is based. And it still does it, and it still works, as demonstrated by how many Americans are willing to go around the world and kill somebody they know nothing about because a supposed authority tells them to.
Now, to me, it seems, Larkin, that the system has also gone through a lot of different updates, or even it's fallen apart in certain cases. Maybe the, if we look at the Prussian system, that was very extremely harsh against the children who were part of that in the early days, as far as I understand it. And as you say, it's very much about putting everybody into the same mold and discipline these kids, basically. Today, it's a different method, I would say, today. It's kind of, it's very lax in a way today. And it, and there's a different quality to that level of education, if we even can call it that, actually. But how do you see it's changed? And do you see that the changes are part of the ongoing plan, the agenda as well?
Well, I think some of the changes are intentional, and some of them are the tyrants trying to make up for the fact that people as a species are kind of starting to grow up.
Yeah.
Like, we start to realize, you know, it's not really good to send your kid to an institution to have him get beat up by the teacher every day. You
right,
know,
right.
Maybe there's a better way. So there are little steps in the right direction. So now, like, in a lot of the world, teachers using blatant corporal punishment, you know, physically assaulting the kids for not doing what they're told, doesn't happen nearly as often. So they have to use different forms of manipulation and condemnation. Mostly it's mental, you know, the whole approval, disapproval thing. The one thing you learn in school is if you do as you're told, you get approval and reward. And if you don't do as you're told, you get disdain and condemnation. They might not hit you, but they'll make sure everybody knows you're a bad person because you didn't do as you were told. So it does change. And I think part of that, like I think sometimes it's hard to tell which was by design and which was by accident.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the quote unquote education system in the U.S., a lot of the kids growing up now are just remarkably stupid, and it's the schools seem to crank them out. Now, yeah. I can't always tell whether that's just because the teachers are incompetent or because the rulers actually realize we need them to be really stupid at this point, because if they can start to think for themselves, the game is up.
Yeah.
So sometimes I can't tell the difference between conspiracy and incompetence, and it may be some of each.
Exactly. I think you're right.
But they do have to sort of compensate for the fact that I think humanity is just beginning to wake up to what it's supposed to be. It's just, I mean, you look back a few thousand years and everybody's killing everybody, and, you know, and
so
there
say,
are
yeah.
big steps forward. And I think it's an accelerating thing. I actually think that the myth of authority in government is completely doomed. I don't know if I'll see it end in my lifetime, but I see the number of people who understand that they own themselves just exponentially exploding just in the last few years. I mean, now I know thousands of people who have given up the belief in government. 10 years ago, I knew maybe three or something.
All right. Wow.
So it's definitely speeding up.
What do you think is driving that, Larkin? Why now? Why in this time?
I don't know. I mean, there have been people saying pretty much what I'm saying for thousands of years. And I've been saying what I've been saying for 15 years. And for the first, you know, 5 or 10, almost nobody paid attention. And now tons of people are paying attention. I think there's something at work way beyond just improved communications, which, you know, of course that helps, and more people saying it. It seems to me, and this may sound kind of strange to some people, but too bad. It seems to me that humanity as a whole seems to get to a point where it's suddenly ready for a new idea, and then the individuals in it suddenly seem able to think about it when before they weren't. Because I can literally point to a bunch of people I know who I was saying the exact same things 15 years ago, and they were saying, oh no, we need government, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, 2 years ago they'd say, you might be right about this. And I think, well, what on earth happened in between? that you can suddenly think about this. I mean, I'm saying the same thing I was back then. I don't really know, but it really seems like some bizarre magical thing happening that's making a lot more people able to think about these things. And I can't explain it. I'm just glad it's happening.
Well, you got that right. That's so true. And it's to me, Larkin, it's that split. It's two different trends that I see. And one is what you just described about the waking up process. And then the second one is where people seem to be going further down the hole of ignorance, if I can put it that way. And it's a split happening in that way. And the indoctrination and the level of manipulation is so intense on this psychological level right now that people fall into that very easily, while others seem to see through it for some reason and manage to, in one way or another, kind of get out of that. What do you think about that idea?
Yeah, it sort of seems like the I hardly ever watch TV. Like, we'll rent movies if we feel like it, but I don't particularly feel inclined to let the control freaks send me their propaganda day after day. So we don't just watch TV. But every once in a while, when I watch the news and I watch a political campaign, it stuns me that anybody believes a word that comes out of their mouths. I mean, yeah. I don't know if I'm just more in tune with the way they spin things, or if it's actually gotten that much stupider. But it really seems to me like their propaganda is just so pathetic. And it may be a symptom of what you're talking about. They realize, well, the smart people, we're not going to get them anymore. So we have to keep as many people completely incapable of thought. I mean, if you look at the Obama campaign, hope and change, that was it. The whole thing.
It's
nothing
hilarious.
More specific than that. Hope and change. Well, that sounds good.
Wow. Yeah.
And it's been pretty pathetic in the US for years and years, but I think it's getting dumbed down to a point that's just, it's stunning that anybody would say, oh yeah, change. I like change, instead of saying, well, what change? What are you changing and from what to what?
Yeah.
And most people didn't care. They got all excited, they got all emotional, and they didn't have the foggiest idea what he was actually talking about. You know, never mind whether it was good or bad. They just had no idea. And if you can just go up to somebody and say, we need hope and change, and they applaud by the millions, yeah, there's definitely a level of stupidity here that I don't think was really that bad before. But at the same time, there are a lot of people waking up. So it may be that the control freaks are just giving up on a large portion of society and just trying to keep enough other people so incapable of thought that they can still be controlled and enslaved. But even that's going to be temporary, because when enough people understand it, even those who don't are going to benefit from the ones who do, basically ending the injustice that's done in the name of law.
Yeah, definitely. We're going to get more into that. Before we move too far away from that subject, you mentioned America in the beginning. And this is a subject in itself, because it is, or at least it was, unique in the world, the experiment that it was. And the idea was there that you talked about how America basically has failed in this basic philosophy, and now America is where it is. And the question is if this was the plan, and I kind of want to get your take on that, considering the Freemasonic origins of the revolutions, and the involvement of the secret societies like the Nine Sisters Lodge, on and on. We can go in that line of thinking. But do you think that was the intention eventually of it, the failure of it as you see it?
Well, I think we have to divide it into individuals. I mean, it's easy to talk about, you know, when I was growing up, there was this bunch of people called the founding fathers of the U.S. and talked as if they were all the same thing. And I think among them, there were some that were completely just political opportunists who were totally planning, all right, how can I get the power and how can I swindle this and how can I build the new ruling class? And I think there were others who actually really all the way wanted freedom. And I might put like Thomas Paine and Patrick Henry in the latter group, who actually, when they got around to doing the Constitution, Patrick Henry said, I'm not coming to Philadelphia. I smell a rat, because he already knew that they were designing the new ruling class and he didn't like that. That's not what he wanted. So I think some of them, yes, it was totally by design that they intended from the beginning for this to be a source of power for themselves and you know, have their little control freak club, and have that go on and on. I think some of them actually meant well. And I think some of them may have been a mix of they kind of meant well, but they wouldn't give up certain things. They were still stuck in certain mindsets. So, for example, I'd like to give Thomas Jefferson the benefit of the doubt that he meant well and was trying to do the right thing. You know, there he couldn't give up the belief in government. He got really close. And he, you know, he owned slaves, an obvious giant contradiction with a lot of the good stuff he said. And eventually, I believe he released them. But that's a pretty huge contradiction to own another human being. And I've read exchanges between Thomas Jefferson and somebody who was pointing out that the American Indians basically didn't have any ruling class. They didn't have a government. And Jefferson was asked, do you think they would benefit from one? And he basically said, no, they should stay the way they are. So I'd like to think that he meant well. A bunch of the other ones, I don't at all believe that. I think they started out with the intention of how can we give power to ourselves. And I do think the Constitution was a victory for the plotting, conniving control freaks, because it was mostly done in secret, and it just out of the blue made up this power. Well, we can tax you and we can regulate certain things. As limited as it was supposed to be, you know, in theory, this is this very limited thing. It was still, they were just sitting there arbitrarily making up powers that Congress were going to have. Well, they can do this and they can do that and they do the other thing, which was a direct contradiction to the Declaration of Independence that we had, which said, you know, all men are created equal and they have unalienable rights. And to turn around and say, we're all equal, and by the way, we get to rob you, that doesn't work. That doesn't add up. So I think there were a bunch of huge contradictions, a lot of good stuff and a lot of bad stuff that happened at the beginning of this country. And most people either they want to sort of glorify and deify the founders and not even look at what they did, not question it, or they just don't pay attention. And I think you really have to carefully analyze individual by individual, because I think some of them did mean well and others were totally out for power for themselves.
Right.
And I think the latter group is the group that won.
Well, the interesting is that it's definitely, one can understand, considering the climate in Europe at the time, feudal Europe, that there was a reason why people wanted to get out, if you will, try something different. And then it's funny then, as you say, that it basically ended up being the same thing. And now you have a political ruling class in America, I would say, as opposed to the monarchy that exists in Europe, basically.
Right. And I actually, again, it's hard to tell when things happen accidentally and when they were by design. But I think that to be the most successful tyranny, a king can't do that. Because a king is just saying, well, I get to rule you just because. If you want to do a higher level of control and monitoring and violence everywhere, democracy and a republic is way better, because you go around stomping people and stealing their money and saying, well, we're doing this on behalf of the people. Because if you say I'm doing this on behalf of a king, eventually somebody gets fed up and knocks the king's head off. But if you can tell the people we're stomping on you and robbing you and controlling all your choices for the common good and for you, and you voted for it and we're representing you, all the propaganda that comes along with it makes it so they can get away with a lot more than any king ever could. I mean, what King George III did to the colonists was nothing compared to what every single Congress and president does to the people here. It's not even close. It's, if you look at what they had a revolution over, it was ridiculous. There was no income tax. There was these little few percent taxes on tea and pieces of paper. Whoopee-doo. They had a revolution over that. And yet every July 4th, you know, Americans are out there waving their flags. Yay, we're independent of this tiny little trivial tyrant that we used to have. And now we have this giant monstrosity that people imagine to be working for us and representing us and all the other rhetoric that goes into making it look legitimate when it isn't. And so they put up with a lot worse than I think they would if some king just came along and said, I'm just going to rule you because I can.
Now, who would you say is the ruling class? And you can go how deep into that you want, considering that there are many layers. There's the people we see. Then there's the people who administer and recommend to the people that we see, and then there's those who we don't see at all, and you know, maybe not even know the names about, but are incredibly powerful and pull the strings and so forth. Who is the ruling class?
Right. I would put the, you know, starting at the bottom level, the cops are part of the ruling class because they get to boss people around and hurt people. And the politicians, to me, are just sort of a step up from them. They're still somebody else's puppet. They're still playing a game somebody else built, but they get their own little bunch of power out of it. So they're part of it, but I don't at all think that they're the top. And I think the people who are at the top are probably pretty embarrassed by how what a bad job some of their puppets do of, you know, correctly sending out the propaganda to keep people enslaved. Mm. As far as the people at the top, I don't, you know, I don't pretend to be able to name names, but, you know, some people say, oh, you think it's a conspiracy. Of course it's a conspiracy. Like everything, you know, you go to a supermarket to buy a drink, and they spent zillions of dollars figuring out what they should put on the label to have people buy it. Mm. I mean, that's, you know, it's not a devious, malicious conspiracy, but that's, you know, planning and conspiring to what can we put on this that, you know, to think that for some reason people wouldn't do that when it comes to politics is just insane. Of course, they spent tons of money and tons of thought on how do we control people? How do we get as much power over them as we possibly can without them resisting or running away or shooting at us or something? Hmm. Of course they plan that. They've been studying that for literally millennia. And I don't pretend to know the names of all of everyone who does it, but of course there is. In fact, to me, it's ridiculous to pretend that there wouldn't be a very intentional conspiracy behind the scenes of how do we enslave everybody. And I think, you know, you get glimpses of it with in the U.S. at least, the Federal Reserve, when it came into being in 1913, that was just obviously a conspiracy by the banking cartels. And it's not a hidden conspiracy. I mean, you can find all the names and all the documents and all history. Mm. And there's the Federal Reserve Act of 1913. It's in U.S. law that said, well, we're just going to proclaim that it's okay to do fraud and counterfeiting in this certain way. And so I think that's a very obvious example of people who sat down with the intended goal of enslaving the world, because there isn't another way to explain it. Why would a bunch of people go hide on an island and come up with this plan that basically fakes out and defrauds everybody who uses U.S. currency? And so I think that totally happens. And I can't imagine why anyone would think it wouldn't, you know, considering how much planning and thought people put into even trivial things of, well, we want to sell a candy bar. Well, what do you put on the commercial and what do you make it look like? And how do you, you know, if they work that hard just to sell a candy bar, how hard do you think someone's going to work to enslave the world? I think one of the biggest challenges is most good people, they can't really understand how sociopaths function. So they have a hard time believing that there are some people who really don't care if they kill thousands of people on their way to getting power. And if you can't imagine that there are such people, then you say, well, no, they can't. It must have been by accident or a misunderstanding or something. It couldn't have been on purpose, because nobody would be that evil. Because normal people really cannot relate to sociopaths. And I think most of the people in office, especially high up, and the people beyond them, the puppet masters or whatever you want to call them, mm-hmm. are totally sociopaths. They don't at all have empathy or sympathy with actual human beings, and they don't mind starting wars and killing millions of people if they think it'll help their investment over here and give them a little more leverage over there. And I think the average, you know, basically good person doesn't even want to aim his thought process in the direction that might tell him, wow, there are some people in the world with that much power who don't care if millions of human beings die.
Yeah,
all the way don't care. It's not that they think, well, okay, it's a price I'm willing to pay. They really all the way totally don't care. To them, it's like stepping on an anthill. And to those of us who cannot imagine being like that, which includes me and most other people, it's hard to come to grips with the fact that, yeah, that's what the people in power are like. And we better understand that and realize that there is nothing they won't do to empower themselves. And if we aren't willing to see them for what they are, we won't know how to deal with them. We won't know how to resist and stop it from happening.
Do you think they justify their behavior, the men and women on the top of all this, that they on some level might think, this is still for the better good of all, and in the long run, you know, bringing globalism, bringing in a world economic system that they want to have, and many people get squeezed in that process, but they might justify that in one way or another for them to themselves. What do you think?
I'm just guessing here. I don't think the people at the very top even think in those terms. I think a lot of their puppets do. I think of, you know, Nixon, Bush, Obama, Clinton, you know, pretty much all of them. I think they do that to themselves. They have enough humanity. They at least for themselves have to make up some excuse for why, well, blowing up all these people over there, it's for the common good because it makes things better. And there was, I forget her name. I don't want to remember her name. Secretary of Defense was basically saying, oh, yeah, I think that's a fine price to pay, that like hundreds of thousands of children have died in the Middle East because of U.S. wars. Mm. So I think in between, a lot of the puppets, even pretty high up puppets, make up excuses and try to rationalize it for themselves and try to, you know, talk about the common good and the collective and all that, all the usual excuses for beating up the individual. But I suspect that at the very top, they just don't care at all. They don't even have to make up excuses. I mean, these are inhuman people, if there is such a thing. They really don't care. And you can see that in some of actually in a lot of things. But like the papers come out about the, what are they called, the Pentagon papers, that show that the government just constantly lied about the Vietnam War. They wouldn't even call it a war. And they knew they weren't going to win. So they were there, you know, the CIA and all the people in power knew they were there just throwing American lives and Vietnamese lives into a black hole that wasn't going to accomplish anything. They knew it. They just did it for political gain. Now, when you know you're not going to, quote unquote, win, not what they said the intention was, when you're just throwing people into a thing that kills them, throwing them into the meat grinder, you're beyond even needing to make up excuses. You just don't care about human beings. And I think the people at the top really and truly couldn't. The only reason they wouldn't kill us all is because then they'd have nobody to enslave.
Well, that's right. They got to have someone to impose their power upon. That's right. Now, this is interesting. We've talked with many people with this before as well, try to get to the root of the nature and what kind of psychology these people, if any, are working on. Do you think that they become this way as they're in, you know, ascend the levels of power, or does this type of person simply just get attracted to the top layers and maybe they within their, well, I mean, there's secret societies up there, there's other groups and interfaces where people get to know each other and network, of course, but do you think that they might be basically recognizing one of them when they see one and consequently drag them with them up to the top? How do you think that works?
I think it's totally both. And I talk about this in The Most Dangerous Superstition. I think a lot of people go into positions of power meaning well, and it turns them into monsters. A lot of people go into power to begin with because they realize, hey, now I'll have power over other people, whether it's, you know, running for local office or becoming a cop or a soldier or whatever. I think it does both. I think any position in which you're going to have power over other human beings, like the power to boss them around and hurt them if they disobey, is going to attract nastier people. And however nasty you are going in, it's going to make it worse. Now, for the people at the top, I think that's probably just genuine sociopaths. I don't think they're just normal people who are messed up. I think they're people who really are incapable of empathy. And this is a thing I've been studying recently, and there have even been like psychologists writing papers about how, sure, you know, politicians totally fit the mold of sociopaths who really have no remorse and they have no empathy for other human beings. To them, the whole life, the whole world is about how do they get what they want, and they can pretend to have empathy if it gets them what they want, and they can pretend to care about people if it gets what they want, and they can sound sincere if it gets them what they want. And it's they make much better liars because they feel no guilt about lying. You know, most of us, if we have to lie, it looks like we're lying because we feel bad about it, because we don't want to lie to other people. Sociopaths don't have that problem. They all the way don't care. They don't feel guilt. And I think the people at the very top are probably mostly or entirely those people. But in between, a lot of people go there because they want to be on a power trip, and the people who aren't get made into that. And the way I describe it in the book, The Most Dangerous Superstition, is basically if it was your job to be a slave master and treat other people like your property, you could not continue to be a good human being. Whatever you were to begin with, if it's your job to initiate violence against other human beings and control them like their livestock, if you were a good person to begin with, well, first of all, you wouldn't want to do that. Second of all, if you did that, it would turn you into a monster. And I know some former cops who have told me that they quit when they noticed the job was turning them into monsters. Because you cannot be in a position of authority, a position of ruling other human beings, and not turn into a monster. As soon as you're convinced you actually have the right to violently dominate innocent people, if you weren't a monster to begin with, you will be now.
Yeah, they have, as someone put it, we had a university professor with us on the program. It wrote a book called they have basically freedom from conscience. They are not within the realm of having that. And as you say, many psychologists have analyzed this and looked at the traits of these people. And it's pretty scary when you think about it, and the way they get attracted to the top and immediately rises to that top. And so with that in mind, why don't we talk a little bit more about government and how what it is in you know, your view, how it functions and why it's so bad as well. If maybe we can just begin with to define some of the terms. Government says the system by which a nation, state, or community is governed, or government is the means by which state policy is enforced, as well as the mechanism for determining the policy of the state. Okay, how would you define government, Larkin?
I think the most succinct, accurate definition I've seen, which used to be in a bunch of dictionaries, is government is the exercise of authority over a people or place. And so to me, the crux is really authority. And that is basically the right to rule. It's not just the ability to control other people, because most people have that in one way or another. It's the right. It's the idea that certain people, it's legitimate for them to forcibly control others. Not just because of the situation, not like saying I have the right to, you know, get the little old lady's purse back from the mugger, but because I am something special and you are my subject, so I have the right to rule you. And that actually it ties in with what you were saying about the cop, because the best way to make to bypass somebody's conscience. Got it on the second try. Conscience is to convince them that they're not acting on behalf of themselves. And cops will say, hey, I don't make the law. I just enforce it. As if I'm not responsible for my actions. I'm just a tool of some weird thing somewhere else called government.
And isn't that the most common response you get often? I just work here. I don't know what the hell is going on, kind of thing.
And right. I'm just following orders. Yeah. I'm just doing my job. Yeah. And it really does imply you can't blame me for what I am personally doing, because I'm not really doing it. Something else is making me do it. And it's as loony as that is, that's what most of them will say whenever somebody says, hey, what you're doing is wrong. It's not okay to, you know, it's not okay to lock people up for smoking marijuana. It's not okay. You know, all the ways in which quote unquote law enforcement initiates violence against nonviolent people. And if you bring that up to them, they literally talk as if they didn't do it. Like they'll be there bashing you over the head with the baton and saying, I'm not doing this. Something else is making me do this. And that's why the belief in authority is what I focus on. Because the only reason they do that is because they were taught the lie of authority and government and law along with everyone else. And then they were told, you're just a tool of the thing called law. And that makes it so you have rights that other people don't have. So you don't have to feel bad about physically assaulting nonviolent people because the law says it's okay. it really is just permission to ignore your conscience by saying you have rights that other people don't. You know, you don't have the right to tell other people what habit to have on your own. You don't have the right to go and extort people on your own. But once you are law enforcement, then not only is it okay, it's noble and great to go around robbing people and bossing them around.
Yep.
And it really is, because the belief in authority leads everybody, good people, bad people, everything in between, to advocate and do things they wouldn't otherwise do, bad things they wouldn't otherwise do, including cops, because the cops really and truly believe that they have the right to do things that I don't have the right to do and you don't have the right to do, which means they have an excuse to ignore their conscience. And just if that was removed, that excuse of authority and government and law and all the other terminology that goes along with it, if that was removed, most cops, you know, however secretly sadistic they might be, wouldn't dare to do this stuff. They, whether it's from public condemnation or just from being scared what somebody else might do to them, the only reason most of them do what they do is because they believe in authority and they really believe that legislation gives them an exemption from morality. They really and truly believe that. So that when they do something and someone says, hey, what you're doing is bad, well, I don't make the law, I just enforce it. I'm just following orders. They really believe that. They really believe that they are not bound by human morality because authority said so.
Yeah. Do you think that if whatever gruesome thing was written up in the law book, that people would do it anyway? Not think for themselves, and maybe this is not applicable across the board, but it seems like, because I'm struggling to understand this, how people perceive this or how they even think about it, if they even think about it. Like, just because it's on a piece of paper, how is this now the right thing to do? I just don't get it.
Right. Well, they don't think about it because they weren't. Belief in government is a purely faith-based, indoctrinated belief. It doesn't actually make any sense in practical terms or in evidence or in logic. And there are ways to prove that, which my book goes through. It's just something they were taught to believe, that there's this thing called authority and that it's allowed to do things that human beings aren't and that people have an obligation to obey it. To the point where, yeah, it's some people, they weren't gods or anything. Some people wrote down a thing on paper and then they called it legislation and they called it law. They did certain rituals to pretend to magically make it something special. Mm-hmm. And then people go around saying, well, this is law. A big thing that my book, The Most Dangerous Superstition, focuses on is the experiments done by Dr. Stanley Milgram in this country. In the late 50s, might have been into the 60s, where he wanted to study to what extent people would just blindly obey a perceived authority and hurt other innocent people just because authority said so. You know, what you were saying, is there any limit to, you know, can you just write down anything on paper and people will do it? Almost. There are some people who will stop at some point, but the Milgram experiments basically showed that about 2/3 of Americans will knowingly inflict horrible pain on a complete stranger who hasn't even been accused of anything just because a perceived authority figure told them to. No other reason. Not because they were threatened, not because they were promised a reward, just because they perceive an authority said, zap that other person. It doesn't matter that the other person is screaming in agony. About 2/3 of Americans will zap the other person. And I highly recommend the book Obedience to Authority by Stanley Milgram that talks about his studies and all the different ways he did it. And it's a very thorough scientific study, and it's really creepy to look at. And to me, one of the creepiest things is when he described the experiment to people who hadn't been through it and to psychologists, and everybody said, oh, everyone's going to stop. As soon as the guy you're supposed to zap, the zapper thinks he's electrocuting somebody else, mm-hmm. at higher and higher voltages. And everybody, when they have the experiment described to them how it actually works, they say, well, as soon as the guy being zapped says, I want out, I don't want to be a part of this anymore, no one's going to go on. Like one time, and the professional psychologist said, like, maybe one in a thousand will be so sadistic they'll keep zapping the guy after he says, I want out. It's actually 65%. And what's really scary to me is that means that two-thirds of human beings hugely overestimate their ability to do the right thing when authority tells them to do the wrong thing. They imagine that they have control over themselves and that they would stand up for what's right, even, you know, being the underdog and all that. And that what the experiment shows is no, two-thirds of Americans will just be malicious murderers if authority tells them to, while imagining that they're progressive and enlightened and in control of themselves and have free will. They don't realize how thoroughly they've been programmed to do whatever their masters tell them to do. So they imagine themselves to be free, and they're just not. And the test is when authority comes along and says, go do this to your neighbor, two-thirds of people will do it, even if it's just blatantly, horribly vicious and malicious and evil, because they've been so trained to do as they're told.
Yeah, it's incredible. I remember hearing about this many years ago now, and again, it's called the Milgram Experiment. I'm going to add a link to this so people can check that out as well and read about it. Do you recall, Larkin, what type of authority figure it was that gave the orders in this case, and who was the one invited? Was this just randomly selected people, or how did this work? Do you recall?
They put out an ad asking for volunteers. They pretended it was going to be a test of human memory. The setup is there are two volunteers. One of them is actually fake. One's an actor. There's two volunteers, one at a zapping machine with switches and buttons on it and voltages, and the other is strapped into a chair. He's the one who pretends to be a volunteer. He's actually an actor. They weren't really electrocuting people in this study.
So he screams behind a wall, basically, right?
Right. And although he tried it in different ways. He tried it where they couldn't see him and then where they could and then a bunch of different variations. But it started, you couldn't see him. He was in a different room.
Mm-hmm.
And so then there's this guy in a lab coat. He's not pretending to be government or a cop or anything. But he's a guy in a lab coat being the authority running the experiment. And what they say the experiment is well, the guy in the chair is supposed to memorize certain things. And every time he gets a memory question wrong, we zap him. And then we turn up the voltage a bit. So the zaps get worse and worse and worse. What they're pretending the experiment is studying whether zapping somebody affects whether they can remember things. But the real experiment is the zapper guy. He was the actual subject. To what extent is he going to zap this complete stranger just because a guy in a lab coat tells him to? And even Dr. Milgram was stunned and terrified the first time he did it and had to totally recalibrate everything because he thought everybody would stop as soon as the guy in the chair says, I want out. I don't want to do this anymore. He thought, well, of course, people are human beings. They're going to stop then. You know, a few might not. Well, actually, two-thirds keep going all the way to the end. That's past the guy screaming in agony, complaining about heart troubles, and then feigning unconsciousness or death. Near the end, he goes dead quiet as if he died or passed out. 65% of Americans will go all the way to the end. And to me, the one of the most important things, which Milgram actually just put down as an observation, the zappers, the people actually being studied to see to what extent they're going to zap a complete stranger, they would tremble and they would cry and they would beg to be allowed to stop, which means they totally knew that what they were doing was wrong. But all the authority would have to say is, no, we have to keep going. The authority never said you'll be in big trouble, or he never said you'll get a big reward if you go to the end. All he had to do was say that the experiment must continue. That was it. I think it was those exact words. And he didn't raise his voice. He didn't scream at them. But these people would literally be just emotional wrecks because they couldn't just say, I'm not pressing that button. They felt so compelled to do as they're told that even when they obviously knew it was wrong, and even if when it hurt them to be hurting an innocent human being, they still couldn't just say, no, why would I do that? And that shows me how important it is for people to get rid of this insane belief in authority, because it makes literally it makes two-thirds of Americans into murderers waiting to happen. If authority comes along and says, hey, murder that guy, two-thirds of Americans probably will, just because they believe in authority.
Do you think it would be true today? This was, as you said, back in the 60s.
Yeah, they did. They did a similar test. I think it was maybe even been in the 90s with the same results.
Oh.
If they did it today, I think we might start to see a little tiny change in the results, because the belief in authority and government is just beginning to fall apart. But yeah, even decades later, they did it again, and the results were statistically the same. And actually, people have, you know, less nasty versions of a similar test. Every time you get pulled over by a cop, like you get pulled over by a cop, if a cop says, "Can I search your car?" most people say, "Oh yeah, sure." Why? Why would you say that? Well, I have nothing to hide. Okay, fine. If a stranger came up to you and said, "Hey, can I search your car?" you'd say, "No, get out of here. What's wrong with you?" But people, even if they know they don't even have any legal obligation to do so, people have such a hard time disobeying a perceived authority. And we, you know, here in the U.S., we have the ridiculous spectacle at all our airports of people being groped and e-stripped to get on a plane, and they go along with it because, oh, well, that's the law and that's authority. If I'm supposed to be treated like a criminal because I want to go somewhere, oh, well, I guess I have to put up with it. And yeah. It's just sort of a littler version of the Milgram experiment. Most people literally feel physical discomfort and fear at the thought of disobeying anyone in authority. I don't just mean the fear of he might beat me up. I mean, even when you know he isn't going to do anything, most people can't say, no, I'm not going to do that. And no, you don't have the right to do that. And no, they, even if they manage to say no, they'll be nervous and terrified and feel uncomfortable because it goes against their years and years of programming and indoctrination that trains them to think if you do as you're told, you're good. If you don't, you're bad. And that's the message of school, and that message gets pounded in people's heads, and that's why the Milgram experiments turned out the way they did, because in the U.S., students are taught over and over and over and over again every stinking day they're in school that the measure of your virtue is how well you obey authority.
Yeah, and look at the state of the world today with no one saying no often enough, basically speaking up against this, or just, well, just choosing not to participate and right. not to obey in this. Larkin, we have much more to talk about. Obviously, we're going to get into some of these aspects in the second hour. I want to talk more about what you see is some of the ways out of this and what you advocate, because it's very, very interesting, and we're going to carry on much more here. But let's talk a little bit about your website first, and obviously the book titles as well. You mentioned The Most Dangerous Superstition. That's is that your latest book now, Larkin?
Yeah, that's the latest one. It was 15 years in the making. I didn't want to release it until I thought I could do the best job I could on it. It's the most important thing I've ever written. And I'm happy to say that I've now had dozens and dozens of people tell me it's the most important thing they've ever read.
That's great. Yeah.
So it really digs to the heart of what I think is the primary problem of human society and has been for thousands of years. So that it came out the most recently, but I actually started it 15 years earlier. It's a short book. It's not a zillion page book. It's like 200 pages.
Well, it's about the quality, not the quantity, right? So.
Right. I wanted to get it as succinct and direct and clear as I possibly could. I think I got it as good as I could. So I released the thing, and it's been a lot of people will buy it and read it and go, holy smokes, I got to give this to a bunch of people. And then they'll turn around and buy 10 more and hand them out, because I really think it is. I'm not the only one who's said these things and pointed it out, but I think it is the answer to the vast majority of humanity's problems. Even lots of the nasty things going on that seem like, well, it's because of those malicious people over there. Almost always the reason they're able to do that is because all of their victims hallucinate a thing called authority. and they couldn't get away with it if their victims didn't imagine it to be legitimate. So anyway, yeah, the most dangerous superstition is the most important thing I've ever written. It's the most recent. It's being reprinted right now. You can still order it at larkenrose.com, LarkenRose.com. But there'll be a couple week delay because I ran out and now they're printing thousands more, which will be here in probably a couple weeks.
That's good. That's encouraging though.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good thing to run out.
Absolutely.
Would have been better if I was organized enough that I had them, but it's always fun to run out.
Oh, well.
And then my another one that's gotten a lot of reviews and is going on all over the place is my novel called The Iron Web, that I actually wrote while in prison in the U.S., in federal prison, for not kissing the ring of the IRS. so that was a fun adventure. Speaking of which, the ebook of Kicking the Dragon is now finally out. That's my own story of my adventures with the U.S. extortion racket, the IRS and the court system. And it's not at all about the philosophy thing, but it's a very enlightening glimpse into what government really is beneath the rhetoric and the propaganda we're taught. And the fact that they don't care about their laws and they don't care about justice and they don't care about anything. They put on a facade of due process and all these flowery, nice sounding things. But underneath, it's just brute force. And they will lie, cheat, and steal all they have to keep their livestock enslaved, their human livestock. So that just came out. It was printed in book form for a long time ago, but it went out of print because it's such a huge book. It costs way too much to print it. But now it's an ebook form that's called Kicking the Dragon. And the first book I wrote called How to Be a Successful Tyrant is also on except for The Most Dangerous Superstition, these are all on Amazon too. So right now I couldn't figure out a way to have The Most Dangerous Superstition on Amazon and say there'll be a 2 week delay in delivery. So right now it's just not up there at all. You can get a used copy for like $160, but somebody else is selling it. But you can still order it at larkenrose.com. There'll just be a delay.
Right. Really good. Larkenrose.com. Briefly tell us about your DVD as well, Theft by Deception.
Right. That has to do with the U.S. federal income tax. Speaking of conspiracies, because it's totally, it was a very frustrating experience for me because basically there is publicly accessible proof to one of the largest financial frauds in the history of the world, as far as I know. Basically the U.S. government had to lie about what their income tax is and pretend it's something it's not in order to get trillions of dollars from people who don't legally owe it. Now, I hardly ever even talk about the legal issue much these days because it's so frustrating that we have the smoking gun all over the place. We have this thoroughly documented trail that anybody can look it up. Anybody can find this stuff that shows what it actually is. And Theft by Deception, the DVD, is an animated thing I made years ago that walks through the income tax law and shows the parts of the law that most people don't look at and shows why it's not at all what most people imagine. And it shows a very obvious, intentional, prolonged attempt to cover up the parts of the law that show the limited nature of the tax. And it's just very obvious. I mean, smoking gun, bloody knife, however many clues you can possibly think of. It tracks it through 80 years of them moving sections and rewording things and covering things up to show that this was never a tax on the average American. Basically, it was a tax on people who do international trade, which under the U.S. Constitution is a federal matter. Somebody working in one of the 50 states isn't. Now, that's a bit of an oversimplified version of the thing, but Theft by Deception explains the whole legal issue in detail and shows how they tried to cover it up. And Kicking the Dragon explains the issue and shows the cover up, but also tells my own story of getting raided by armed thugs and having them steal the videos I made. Theft by Deception, what's for sale? They stole every copy they could find of that. It was never illegal. They never pretended it was. Mm-hmm. They never had an injunction or anything. They just showed up my house and stole it. Wow. You're in the land of the free. But it's still out there. So that's the very video that they would – that's like the best advertisement for it is federal 12 armed federal agents showed up in my house to steal them all. That's how much they don't want people seeing it without ever pretending it was illegal. They said it was a search warrant. We're looking for evidence of a crime.
Wow.
Even though I asked them, well, is there anything illegal about it? Well, no. So just blatant book burning mentality.
Wow. Well, it's funny how the law seems bendable too. It's just applicable in certain cases and not in others. Huh? So that's just amazing. All right. Well, we have much more to talk about. This is very interesting. We're going to do so in the second hour. LarkinRolls.com. That's the website. Go there then to find out much more. We have just barely scraped the surface here in the first hour. And there's lots of material for you there to explore. Check out Larkin's videos as well. They're linked up on the website and there are links to his YouTube channel from there. All right, we'll be right back with Larkin Rose. Hidden History on Japan. After this, Paul Hellier, Barbara Oakley, Douglas Dietrich, Marty Leeds, Katie Diolos, Mark Gaffney, John Coleman, and Rick Simpson. But right now, we're going to proceed to talking more with Larkin Rose for members. In the second hour, Larkin continues to explain how government must cloak their actions in an aura of moral legitimacy in order to sustain their power. He further demystifies the government superstition and exposes tyranny, murder, lies, and violence. Larkin says we need freedom, not democracy. We'll talk about what the world would look like without government. And we end the second hour talking about the political future of the USA and the ripple effect. Go to redicemembers.com and sign up for a membership to get instant access to this and all our previous programs. Commercial-free radio, well over 650 programs on all kinds of topics that we find important and interesting. It's a library of controversial, essential, spiritual, conspiratorial, and esoteric material. All vital stuff in these times of change, confusion, darkness, and rebellion. I also want to mention that as a member, you have every single program available in our RSS feeds for super easy access with your podcast app, iTunes, or whatever you use to stream or download to listen. If you go to the new members' website, you can also comment on the programs, share your opinion, your input, or if you simply have some additional information that you want to reference to our other members. Thank you for listening to the first hour. I hope you stay with us for the second. Thanks, guys.